welcome to Four Panel. We are the geek show's dedicated show to everything comic book related. So I'm Andrew, and today I am joined by...
me. Hello, I'm Rob.
I was going to say, that was very helpful. I am joined by me. And I am Ben.
Hello, Ben. Hello, Andrew. How are you guys doing on this rainy, rainy summer's day?
Yes, yes, sorry.
Ah, the good British summers. More rainfall than the winter.
You know what it means, though? It means Wimbledon is around the corner.
Yes, it does. Torrential rain to go with that, Ennis.
Yes. Anyway, yes, we've got quite an interesting mix of stuff to get through today, including me fuddling my way through the latest chapter of Bucky Barnes.
Yes, it's always a pleasure to see you just try and comprehend what happens in that comic.
I kind of understand what's been going on now, but only kind of.
Is that because you have actually gone insane now?
No. I think that happened a while ago. You know,
like I said, I think this is just the tale of Bucky Barnes' fever dream, and like at the end, he will wake up and be like, "Oh, I'm not doing that again."
That was a hell of a bender last night. Okay, we're going to start off with Wonder Woman has a costume redesign. What do you guys think?
I love it.
I'm a fan.
It looks like a warrior's wear.
Yeah.
Like, before, it was not very practical.
It was very practical for beach season.
So anything where you can reach out, grab, and pull it down, not good defense.
Yeah,
like, I mean... skirts... not the best way thing to wear in combat.
Well,
the gladiators pulled it off quite well, but...
the thing is, she's supposed to be like a Greek warrior-type person, so it's not really a skirt in her case. It's a kilt, an armoured kilt.
Well, except in the cases when, yes, it was very much a skirt.
Yeah, that was only because DC were going, oh, she must be wearing a skirt. It's not a kilt, it's a skirt, because, you know, kilts don't exist.
No, tell the truth, it was probably first a kilt. It was first a skirt, and then someone was asked, why the hell is she wearing a skirt? Kilt.
Yeah.
And plus, it makes very little difference when it's not armoured, it's just a piece of fabric that's just a skirt.
I mean, I'm liking the shoulder guards, I'm liking the expanded wrist guards. The wrist guards have spikes in them now.
I've got to admit, the spikes, I'm not that big a fan of.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they suggest lethal moves.
They're sort of the bracelets as part of an iconic thing that made sense about her.
Yeah.
Because you used to deflect the bullets and stuff with them.
Not that she needed to, since she's pretty much bulletproof as it is, isn't she?
Actually, there is a comic that explains why she blocks them. And it is basically her getting shot in the boob, them wobbling, and then people continue to shoot her in the boob to watch them jiggle.
This was
a legit comic.
That makes so much sense.
And then she's like, yes. And like, because Superman asks her, and she's like, yeah, I get why you block them now.
Okay. DC?
What are you doing, DC? Wonder Woman isn't Power Girl.
Yes, I know. Although we have seen Power Girl's 90s costume, and it is just as bad as now.
Well, no, that's unfair. That costume is far worse.
Yeah. Okay, right, so...
Explain why that hole was there in Power Girl costume as well, though.
It was in the 90s there. It was there in the 90s. The boob window was there.
I know, but they gave a reason why she has that, and she's like... it's something about like her trying to find her place in the world, and eventually she'll find a symbol to cover it up. But she's never found the place she belongs, so she's never found her symbol.
Yes, but you can just put plain fabric.
Yeah,
you don't have to just leave a hole.
Like, it was very touching, like, the way she put it. But yeah, it could have just been plain fabric. Or anything, really. Just
not a hole.
Put on a hoodie.
Yes.
Well, just fine. So it's not there to offer protection, so... I'll probably catch the wind when you're flying.
Ooh, yeah, that is it. No one has talked about the chafing.
Yeah.
Yes, the chafing. Anyway, back to Wonder Woman's costume.
Yeah, it's a cool design. Like I said, it looks warrior-esque.
It does.
Yeah, and it's a lot more practical than the old one.
But it is a bit star-spangled.
Yes.
No, it's a bit Captain America now as well.
I'll tell you, it was just one part where she has, like, a blue bit on her hip that has a star on it. And I'm like... if you made that red star, I'd be fine, because she's got the red stars on her
tiara thing, yeah. Which has suddenly gone from being silver to being gold.
I think it was gold originally.
Yeah, it was gold originally, then it was silver.
Because it matched the gold lasso.
Yeah, it was gold originally, and then for some reason they changed it to silver, and now it's back to gold again. So, okay, that's a move back. But red stars, I would have said fine.
I like how they looked at Wonder Woman's costume and thought, do you know what the problem here is? These gold bits need to be silver. That's the one thing we need to change about Wonder Woman's outfit.
Yeah, I mean, they've changed the boot coloration, because it used to be the blue boots with the white stripe up the front, but now it's red boots with the white stripe up the front and blue leggings.
Always red boots.
Yeah, I thought they were red.
No, it used to be blue.
No, I'm pretty sure Wonder Woman's always red had red
top,
boots.
Blue skirt.
Yeah, red boots.
Oh, right. So have they gone back to the red boots then?
But then again, I have seen variations, blue top, red pants.
I've got one of the pictures in front of me here. It says a red top, blue whatever they are, blue bottoms and blue boots there.
It's probably changed a billion times over the years.
That looks like one of the varieties.
Yeah, so red boots now, but they're thigh-high boots now.
Offers ample leg protection?
Yes.
Are there any heels?
No.
Good.
Yes, I agree with you.
That is...
Yeah. No one can be a superhero in high heels. Yeah.
The only person I get that gets away with it is Weishni, because they actually reference it in the show and go, I can't believe she wears these things during combat. But then she's like, screw it, I practice every day with these, so I'm fine with them. I'm like, okay, I get that.
Yeah, it could be worse. It could be like Dazzler and wear rollerblades.
Just rollerblades. They're awesome.
No.
And tell the truth, they're more helpful than her actual power.
That's true.
It means she can at least leave quicker.
What was Dazzler's power again? I've forgotten.
Sparkly sparkles.
Yeah, she turns sound into sparkly lights. Yeah.
So basically she was a disco ball type thing.
Yeah, I think that was the point.
Oh, no. She was one of those, you know those little lights that you get in the nightclubs now? The laser lights and stuff like that. She was basically one of those.
Yeah, she was basically just there for a DJ setup, minus the music.
Is she the fun? Is she the idiot who stands by the DJ booth doing that all the time?
Yes.
That works on the audio.
It's like kind of throwing his hands.
Yeah.
Is that a...
Yes, we need much more visual humor on this radio show.
Yes.
She's sort of like Jubilee, but less helpful. Yeah, try and wrap your head around that.
Jubilee could make fireworks.
I know.
Exactly. Jubilee was entertaining.
Imagine if those fireworks just didn't do anything.
Yeah, but...
They were just the light.
She could be good for cats, entertaining cats.
Yeah. Wait, yes. Or kids, or...
Mr. Catman takes over the world, Dazzler can distract him.
She could be good for nightclubs. You know, nightclubs would hire her for an evening. It would save them a heap on electricity.
That's the joke we just made like 5 minutes ago, Rob.
Yes, I know.
Don't need to bring him back.
But it's okay, because Rob's made the joke now, so we can move on.
Is this real?
Anyway.
No, Rob, you've been reading too much Bucky Barnes, and now nothing is real anymore.
Okay. Anyway, moving on. David Tennant is going to voice Mason Savoy in an adaptation of a very, very odd comic book series called Chew.
Yeah, this was one of the early comics we reviewed when we just started this show, wasn't it?
What is this Chew?
Right. Chew follows Detective Tony Chew, who is a cibopath, spelled C-I-B-O-P-A-T-H, a person who gets psychic visions from whatever he eats except for beets. He lives in a world where bird meat is illegal after a bird flu killed millions of Americans. There are a plethora of other types of paths within the story as well, including Amelia Mintz, who can describe food in writing so well that the reader feels like they're eating it. Tennant's character Mason Savoy is Chew's mentor, who eventually becomes the villain.
This does sound like a very strange comic.
Oh, God, they have an old woman who can hypnotize people with sweets. It was one of those ones where I think they looked at, like, Werther's Originals and thought, how can we use that?
Yes, how can we make that a superpower?
So, yeah, it's not one that I would have... It's not a series I would have assumed would be up for, you know, option or even adaptation.
Well, it must
have... It's a very obscure series.
Had a decent following if it's managed getting a TV show.
Yeah, it's got a decent following, but, I mean, I would have put quite a few things ahead of it. Chew seems like a very niche title.
So it might be just... Maybe someone's looking for something that's a bit more out there. I mean, if you look at the current trend of what cartoons are doing well, Gravity Falls, Adventure Time, Rick and Morty.
It is an animated series, not a live action one. But
so those sort of things are quite crazy and out there, yeah, and so they're doing really well.
Deliberately be looking for something oddball.
I think David Tennant's a good choice for a voice, though. You know, I think he'd work.
Yeah, he seems to be a pretty good choice for most things.
If nothing else, it's going to get them a bit of, like, recognition.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, Tennant's got such a following that he could be...
Yeah, he will bring...
He's going to draw in a crowd.
Him.
He's going to draw in a crowd.
So, it's good casting just to get their reputation out there. Like, I haven't read the comics, so I can't tell how good he is for the character.
Yeah.
But he is a good actor. Done voice work in the past, it's been good, so yeah, can't see it going badly.
Yeah. Moving on then, Chiara Renee is playing Hawkgirl, or has played Hawkgirl in the final episode of The Flash. She's also in the, what was it? The
Legends of Tomorrow. Because we say she played Hawkgirl, and the fact that she appeared kind of stared upwards, and that was like her sole contribution.
Yes, she is Hawkgirl
in
Legends.
I am looking at a thing.
Yeah, she is Legend of...
Hawk Power.
She's Hawkgirl in
like
Legend of
in
Tomorrow.
Room,
but the thing is, it's now been announced that she is getting her own Hawkgirl spin-off series from those two bits.
Oh, I hope she looks up at things. That scene, it moved me.
Did you just want hours of her gazing intently?
Was it an Oscar clip?
What they need to do is just have like loads of awesome battles going on in the sky and just... A camera from like over her shoulders, her looking up
wistfully, wishing, why can't I be involved in that? I have wings, why can't I go up there?
I
have a giant
girl
mace.
Always found her more interesting than Hawk Guy. Hawk Guy was a bit boring,
yeah. That's only because Hawk
Man,
Hawk Man, who cares? He's that boring, can't even remember his name.
The thing is, Hawk Man was just kind of he was a beefcake with an axe and wings, wasn't he?
Mace.
Pretty much.
No, Hawkgirl had the mace.
I thought they both had maces.
I think they...
No, Hawkman had the sword. He swapped between
the
sword.
Hawkman is like a whole different...
Yeah, because he goes through like the multiple weapons, but Hawkgirl always uses the mace.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Hawkman had a mace at some point.
Yeah.
But then maybe
I've
he
seen
turned
him...
into Hawk Guy and used a sword.
I've seen him mostly with an axe, though.
And then he turned into Hawkeye and got
Hawk...
bow.
No, that was Hawk Dude.
No, yeah, Hawk Geezer. But yeah, Hawkgirl has always used a mace for as long as I've
Hawkgirl is definitely like the one who uses a mace.
Just her compared to Hawkman, she's a lot more interesting. Like,
it's because
Hawkman just sort of turns up, beats stuff up, and is always like, I am serious and things.
Well, Hawkman is basically like, you know, a Batman with wings, only without the detective stuff and with you know, trying to match the intensity. Yeah. I'm Hawkman.
And a bit more of a lethal of a weapon.
Yeah, a bit more willing to kill stuff.
And just constantly forgetting to wear a shirt.
Yes. He likes his chest hair.
It's always laundry day. Every day he's getting called out. God damn it, I'm going to have to go out in my pants again.
He's just really proud of his chest hair. He's really proud of it.
Or maybe like he puts on the shirt, but like he forgets he has his wings under the shirt, so he just goes, oh, it's time to action. Oh, there goes another shirt.
I need to cut some holes or something.
I honestly believe he is just really proud of his chest hair. I think he shampoos it and styles it before he goes out. You know, so every hair is in perfect position for aerodynamic efficiency.
Anyway, before we got...
Or maybe he's just looking for a shirt that really expresses who he is. But because he hasn't found it yet, he's just going to keep it empty.
Is that a Power Girl reference?
Yes.
Tell the truth, even if you found a thing, you just get, like, just the logo everything else. It's like a reverse boob window where it's just a circle over the top.
No, you put Hawkman and Power Girl together and you've basically got one complete costume. Yes, anyway, so there you go, DC. That's how to fix it.
Like I was saying, Hawkgirl has more personality going. She has more flaws, more interests.
It's interesting that DC spun it that way, though, because normally with DC, especially when Hawkgirl and Hawkman first appeared, it was all kind of Wonder Woman was like the major female hero.
Yeah.
A few other female heroes had started creeping in, but Hawkman and Hawkgirl suddenly appear, and everyone thought, oh, it's all going to be about Hawkman and, you know, everything like that. And all of a sudden, Hawkgirl just suddenly went completely left field, and she became, like, really interesting and a completely separate character. And Hawkman was left being kind of a flying Incredible Hulk.
He just kind of faded into the background.
Well, he basically became a flying Incredible Hulk. He'd go around and bash stuff and then go home.
Well, I think the idea of those two was they wanted him to be all cool and always strong and always... But that doesn't make an interesting character. So they made Hawkgirl to question it.
Yeah.
Then he could still be the strong, I'm just going to punch the things guy, but they could still have the questions there. But then everyone forgot about the strong guy because that's just boring.
Yeah, and everyone just turned to Hawkgirl because she was cool.
Yeah, because she was doing stuff. She was asking questions. She was actually caring about things.
Yes.
So, like, still doesn't explain why she's getting a TV show. Because
I think it's DC, they're trying to build quite a big kind of TV universe. And I think that they're kind of like trying to diversify a bit, which I think is a good thing.
Either that or the CW is just trying, which is the channel that this is on, they're just trying to kind of make like DC. They're going to change their name to DC TV or something like that.
Or pulling out any superhero and just being like, you get a series, you get a series.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's a lot of characters
Howard the Duck, you get a series.
Have a more interesting series than Hawkgirl.
Howard the Duck.
Because, like, even though, like I said, she's more popular than Hawkman, she's still not that interesting.
Oh, what was that one from Charlton Comics we found in that in that box
E-Man.
Of comics? E-Man. Yeah, E-Man gets one. He was the thing.
Drugs. She gets E-Man and Dazzler can team up.
Dude, my hands are, like, shining. That's not even Dazzler saying that. E-Man.
No. E-Man and Dazzler versus their arch enemy, the glow stick.
It's just some guy
with a ring of glow sticks around his neck chucking them at them.
It's
like Roland the floor screaming, he's too powerful. Like,
we must fight every Friday night.
Oh, no. No.
We're out on a Tuesday. It's student night. Good deals.
No. E-Man and Dazzler versus the Rave Master. Have a bit of a manga crossover there as well. It could work. Anyway, yes.
It's DJ Dex of Doom.
Yes. Moving on.
Featuring DJ Jugsy Jeff.
And his Dex of Doom. Moving on. DC Comics have confirmed that Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy are an actual couple. They are lovers.
Surprising literally no one.
Yes. I mean...
Yeah, it's been, like, so heavily, handily put in there. Everyone knows it. Everyone's seen it.
I think the real surprise of this story is it wasn't already canon.
I mean, Harley, when she falls in love hard, doesn't she? She basically becomes, like, completely loyal to whoever she falls in love with. And it was really obvious from some of the Harley Quinn comics that she'd basically fallen hard for Poison Ivy because she was touchy-feely and very kind of
It's very
hands-on.
Obvious from every interaction they've ever had in, like, the past 10 years.
Exactly.
Like, they left the just good friends line behind so many years ago.
I think the major thing is that has there ever been, like, major characters in a lesbian relationship or in any form of gay relationship?
I know there are like gay and lesbian superheroes, but I think this is probably the most high profile one, I'd say.
I don't know. Wasn't Kyle, what's his name? Rainer Green Lantern?
No, he's always been straight.
Has he always been straight?
Yeah, because his girlfriend famously got killed and stuffed in a fridge.
Yeah, I thought that turned him off women for a bit. Oh, no.
Yeah, I can't have a girlfriend now. I've got one in my fridge.
Yeah.
Or was it one of the...
So frigid,
that wasn't a girl.
He's giving me the cold shoulder.
Or was it one of the Teen Titans who got touted as being, like, gay?
I know that Bobby Drake recently came out as gay.
Yeah, I know.
But it's like, it is a relationship between two major characters. Like, when you think Batman, Harley and Poison Ivy are two of the ones that go up there.
Well, they're definitely like his two biggest female villains.
Exactly. Mm. Catwoman.
Oh, yeah, and Catwoman. But Catwoman, she's less of a villain now.
Yeah.
You don't actually know.
She's an anti-hero.
I honestly have thought this for years. I honestly think Catwoman is bi.
Oh, yeah, I feel like that's been confirmed.
Yeah, I honestly think Catwoman is bisexual because she has like a weird, this weird relationship with Harley and Poison Ivy, which goes back quite a long time. I mean, we're talking like pre-1990s. That relationship was kind of verging on. Nobody was sure what was going on, and then she obviously has a thing for Batman, which she's been carrying around, for a long time. And there was a whole thing between her and Barbara Gordon as well at one point, which was kind of, she quite liked Barbara Gordon and Barbara Gordon quite liked her.
So nobody loved Barbara Gordon.
And this was
the Joker.
This was when Barbara Gordon was Batgirl, though. So before she was, before she became Oracle.
You're still cool as Batgirl.
Yeah,
she's even cooler now as Batgirl.
No, all I'm saying is, you know, Catwoman, nobody's actually sure. And
so, I'm really happy they've come out and they've said that they're together because they are one of my OTPs. I mean, they are adorable together.
Oh, God, yeah, I don't think I've ever met anyone who doesn't ship them.
Yeah, yeah. I know people who like ship Harley and the Joker, who are still like, what about Poison Ivy? Like, oh yeah, that's tough. Like, even the people who want Harley to be with someone else still ship it. Best pairing.
And now it's confirmed.
Yes. Anyway.
And now that it's canon, people stop caring.
Yes.
Because that's the way it goes.
Yeah. They'll just look for something new to focus on. Moving on to some manga news. The author of Princess Jellyfish, or Kuragahime as it's called, Akiko Higashimura, she is the author of Kuragahime or Princess Jellyfish. She's starting a new manga series in August. The August issue of Kodansha's Morning 2 magazine is announcing that Akiko Higashimura will launch an unnamed new manga series in the following issue on August the 22nd. That one should be interesting because Princess Jellyfish is one of those... It seems like a niche title and it deals a lot with kind of fan culture, but it doesn't deal with like anime and manga fan culture, but all the other... It deals with like the other oddball kind of fan cultures that you find.
How oddball are we talking about?
There is one of the... this girl goes to live in this a boarding house. And it's like an all-female boarding house. And she has a thing for jellyfish, but only because, you know, she thought jellyfish were cute when she was a kid. So she's forever drawing jellyfish and stuff like that.
Jellyfish are cute.
And, you know, it's kind of, she continues drawing them because she's lonely. She's, you know, she's a bit of a geek. She's kind of plain and, you know, she's very attached to her mum before she died. So it's kind of a memory of her mother type thing. But the people she lived with, one of the women is obsessed with old men or older men and old men. She's basically an old man otaku. One of them is obsessed with
reverse cougar.
Yeah. One of them is obsessed with, you know, those creepy little Japanese dolls of little girls that they put on like to display, and there's multiple ones of them, and it seems like something out of a horror movie.
Okay, I think I know what you're talking about.
One of them is obsessed with them to the point where she even looks like one, only kind of a shorter, fatter version of one, with glasses. The various characters like that, they're all female otaku, but they're not related to like anime and manga. They're all otaku about like weird things. And it's basically about their life in this boarding house with their mysterious landlord who has disappeared somewhere in the world. Nobody knows where. And then one day, this really fashionable woman walks in, you know, it's really fashionable. And everyone's going, oh my God, my eyes, she's so beautiful. And then they find out it's actually a dude. and then weird things happen again.
Was that what it was like when you first met Dave?
Yes. It was all kinds of fabulousness. And then I thought, and they're like, you're a guy? But yeah.
Still damn fabulous, that man.
So, yes. So I'm actually looking forward to the new series. It's one of the few authors that I do follow. So, yeah, looking forward to that one. Right, shall we get into some comics now? Because we got Catwolf to look forward to.
Yes, we do have Catwolf to look forward to.
Right, who wants to go first then?
I guess I'll start with Squadron Sinister, number one.
Okay, what's Squadron Sinister?
This is a group of villains in the during Secret War. The villains are Hyperion,
yeah,
Hawk, Nighthawk, Dr. Spectrum, Whizzer. Great name, by the way.
I like that Whizzer has like a bright yellow costume.
Yeah, and Warrior Woman. She was very creative with her name. So yeah, thing with Whizzer, do we really need another speedster? Really? Just another guy who runs fast? There's about a billion of them at this point.
Yeah, but I feel this one is deliberately based on a certain other speedster.
True.
Which, like how all the Squadron Sinister are based on certain other characters.
Yeah, each one sort of obviously inspired by certain characters, and it's not like at all trying to hide it.
No, like, they are just the Justice League.
Yeah. And this, a lot of this is just establishing the characters. It's the first one, trying to meet everyone, establish what they're like. I like, there's a scene where it's in like their little housing place and they've just got trophy cases of things from the Justice League. They've got like Green Lantern's thing, Lantern. How did I named the word and forgot the word.
That was impressive.
They've got the Lasso of Truth, like all sorts of stuff like that. So they defeated the Justice League in their little universe. But they get one of the Thor Corps comes to talk to them, and this one's Iron Thor, he's Iron Thor.
Yeah, basically Iron Man with more wings.
He's basically Iron Man, just with bolts on his front in the place that Thor has his, and then the little wing things on his head, because that's how you make anything Thor.
Pretty much.
And shortly after they have this encounter, they find Iron Thor dead in their house. And they're like, oh damn, if the other Thors find this out, we're dead. Like, we're good and everything, but we can't beat all the fours. So what we need to do is find out who did it before the fours work out. We've got a day or two. And they also go to take out another group of evil people called the Shadow Dwellers. And there was a lot of similarities between like the main guy in that and the main guy from the Squadron Sinister. So I'm wondering if it's like, are there a bunch of groups of very similar
things? Well, I think the idea is like all the various alternate versions of that group have kind of like shoved into the same corner of battle.
Oh, I see.
I like the Squadron Sinister just going around taking out all the other versions of them because they want to be the best ones.
Yeah, doing Highlander style.
Yes.
So it's quite cool. It's a bit slow, but I think that's because it is the first issue. They're trying to, there's a lot of characters to introduce, a lot of ideas, and it's really cool. Not sure what else to say. It's a cool comic. None of the characters are particularly likable at this point, but they're all villains. I don't think they're meant to be likable.
Yeah, I think they're all meant to be jerks. Joy from just having all these characters who are just so out and out awful.
Yeah, and like, I got a lot of entertainment just from their comic, their like costume designs and being so over the top and stuff. Like, it's a parody of what it's doing, really. It's a parody of comics in a comic.
Yeah, it definitely is to an extent.
So, yeah, Sinister Squadron, number one. Go get it. It's good.
Fantastic. Do you want to go next?
Yes, yes. So, first up, I will talk about issues 3 and 4 of Chrononauts, which at long last I've been able to get my hands on.
You and your Chrononauts, you're obsessed.
I know, I am. Although, not anymore. So, issue three... Yeah, we'll begin with that. Issue three is actually really good. Because, basically, it continues as, like, the two main characters just run around through time, kind of doing crazy, messing things up. Like, literally, it opens up to just them giving the middle finger to Morrissey and telling them he can go form his own band because he's kicking them out of theirs.
Nice.
But, basically, that all comes crashing down when a team of mercenaries from their own time kind of come back to basically arrest them and take them back to the future before like they can do any more damage to the time stream. And it's really cool because basically they manage to escape in like one of their cars that can travel through time. And basically it's just an entire massive chase throughout all of time.
That's a cool idea.
Like there's a great bit like where basically there's a guy on top of their car about to shoot them, but they travel back to like JFK's assassination. And Lee Harvey Oswald accidentally shoots the guy in the head. And, of course, it all ends by basically dumping them in prehistoric times, where most of them get eaten by dinosaurs.
I think that's the way to go. Yeah. You need to get rid of someone, dump them with the dinosaurs.
So that was cool. And then issue 4 kind of takes place immediately after that, where basically they think they're safe again, so they go back to Samarkand in 1504, kind of... not sure whereabouts it is. Like one of the kind of Muslim-y countries in the Crusades, but basically they have a fortress there.
Israel?
Yes, Israel. That's it.
So well, as it was known then, Palestine.
Yeah, Palestine. That's the word. So they get there, but they find that basically that their second in command guy, who they left in charge of the fort, he's decided to betray them and kind of captures them, and he wants them to tell them how to time travel. But obviously, they don't want to tell him. So basically, he captures one of them and kind of sends the other one off just to die in the desert. But he actually manages to escape and then basically travels the world until eventually he comes across, like, the long-decayed corpse of one of the mercenaries from issue 3. And basically, because the time travel devices are meant to last, like, 100 years, you can just take that one and basically he travels back in time, gathers like this crazy huge army of like Romans and samurai and soldiers and tanks and stuff, and basically just goes to like attack the fort and rescue his friend. And if the series had kind of ended there, it would have been awesome. But it doesn't. It goes on for a bit longer and basically ruins everything. Because like then they just decide, you know, they have to set everything back to how it was. So they kind of just undo pretty much everything that happened in the series. But it's not just that, because the main guy then decides he's going to go like back to when he was working on the time machine and his wife left him.
Okay.
But then, basically, because there's essentially two of him now in that time, he decides to like, basically date his wife and keep working on the time machine. And I really don't like that. It feels a bit seedy to me. Because he's basically lying to his wife and kind of tricking her into falling in love with him. And just, it feels a bit ethically awkward to me.
Since it sort of put you off this, do you think they could fix it in the future by, I don't know, having him realise how ethically awkward he is? And
I think so.
Trying to go back and prevent himself from doing it.
Yeah, I think that would work. I think it's a problem of Mark Millar, once again, not putting enough thought into something. Because like maybe if like he'd gone back to just like him in the past and been like, oh, here, this is how you make the time machine. Now stop working on this and actually spend some time with your wife.
Yeah.
I would have preferred something like that.
Yeah.
Rather to just like this kind
better.
Of abusing time travel stuff, have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, what dick?
Exactly. And it's just, it kind of makes me just immediately stop caring about the characters.
Yeah, it when you see someone do like something like that, it's hard to sort of see them in the same light. Like, it's such a shame because you were so excited about this series.
Yeah, yeah, because I loved it, like, literally up until just those last few pages.
Yeah, it's really knocked the wind out of your sails.
It has. I'm really disappointed.
Hmm. Well, hopefully they get their stuff together.
I mean, the art's still lovely, though.
Yeah.
Especially, like, just with the massive splash page of, like, guys on horseback fighting, like, samurais and tanks.
That does sound so awesome.
Cool. Right, just... Can I do Winter Soldier? Should I do Winter Soldier?
You can try and do Winter Soldier.
Right. Winter Soldier, starting off with a picture of what looks like a football world type thing with a hole in it, or some craters, held on the shoulders of Bucky Barnes, who is in the Atlas Shrugged position, and sitting on top of it is Loki, the God of Lies. Now, this is all about Loki. Loki steals the show. He turns up on this planet of... Ventolin, was it? It's called?
Yes, I think that's the word.
Which sounds like something that you take for asthma. And on this planet, there is this thing called Ilum, which basically...
No, wait, Ventolin. She's like the space princess. Oh, the planet is like Merzibo.
Yeah, Merzibo. Sorry, yes, that's it. Merzibo, the planet. Ventolin
it is
the...
It sounds like a little rural English town now that I think about it.
Yeah, Merzibo is the planet, and it's being held hostage by Crossbones and Loki. Loki wants this plant that grows on it called Ilum, which is basically a drug. So Loki is now a drug dealer. And he is threatening the planet with Crossbones, who is pointing another planet at the planet in order to destroy the planet. And so,
like planets, so put planets in your planets, planets.
Yep, exactly. So basically, Loki's whole idea was this. Crossbones goes off on one, thinking that he's lost and he's out for revenge, everything like that, yada, yada, yada. Loki gets old Bucky Barnes to bring young Bucky Barnes to Merzibo, and basically in order to lure Crossbones into that universe so that Crossbones would point a planet at Merzibo to destroy the planet, forcing young Bucky and old Bucky to work together to try and save the planet. And also in the meantime, Loki could actually basically hold Merzibo hostage because he's in touch with Crossbones and he's the one who's guarding Crossbones. And it's all in order for him to get Ventolin to hand over the rights to all of the Ilum on Merzibo to Loki, which he can then use to give to his followers, increasing their belief in him so that he then can work more towards being the one true god. Basically, it's a con.
Yeah, pretty much.
I've got to admit, when Loki appeared in this and started explaining stuff, it started reminding me a bit of American Gods, the Neil Gaiman book. And I just like the fact that after Loki's explained his grand plan, he's about to threaten Bucky Barnes, both of them, and Ventolin, young Bucky Barnes just punches him in the side of the head.
Which is just such a Winter Soldier thing to do.
Yeah, and Loki's on the floor. And then Crossbones has a visitor, but it's not the visitor he expected. It's not Bucky Barnes, who are on their way to the planet that Crossbones is on. It's, what was the name, Diane Johnson or whatever her name
is? Daisy Johnson.
Daisy Johnson. She has appeared, and she's going to give Crossbones one hell of a beating. So, yeah, I kind of understand what's going on, but my God, what the hell was going on before this? I think this is basically, you know, after they've woken up, and they've gone, oh, I'm not sure what we had last night, but I think we need some breakfast. I think this is the breakfast comic.
Yes, this is like the morning after the night before.
Yes, because the night before was just one weird trip. It was just went off on one. But this, I think, is basically, this is basically two cups of coffee into the hangover. That's what this version of Winter Soldier is. Two cups of coffee into the hangover, the story starts making a bit more sense.
Fair enough.
But not much. That's what this is. Two cups of coffee. There you go. Who's next?
I guess I'll go up next with another team of villains. This time, Secret Six.
Are you sure they're not called Censored?
Oh, this is because... the cover basically has them all about, you can't really tell what's going on because there's a giant circle on it that says Censored.
But basically, naughty fun times are about to ensue.
Yeah, the first few pages is, okay, who was having sex on the sofa last night? I can't get to smell right. I need to get plastic wrap or something on this because you ruined my sofa. So, this is basically a group of, like, I was going to say B tier, but they're
They're way below B tier.
Yeah, they're about D tier.
Yeah, yeah.
Villains who are currently laying low in his suburban house, just trying to get on without the world knowing they're really doing anything, but kind of doing a bad job at it as well. I'm having trouble describing what happens in this comic because not much happens in this comic. Like, they talk about having sex on the sofa, then they make some eggs. A guy gets angry at a guy for abusing his dog. They later go and basically completely kick the living daylights out of that guy and take his dog. But nothing really happens.
Is this like kind of suburban villains type thing?
Kind of. It's like I don't know what to say about it just because I don't feel like... Maybe it was just because I'm coming in at number three. Maybe the other...
Yeah, I mean, I think basically the first two issues were like quite a big thing with like them having to escape from this big underground base thing.
Yeah, because the thing is they're talking about like, oh, we need to hide from these guys. And at the end it hints that one of them's a traitor and... It's just, I don't know the rest of the stuff that's going on, and it just feels like a very boring thing to get into. And, like I said, since all the characters are sort of D-list, they're not that entertaining.
Like, I mean, actually, I enjoyed the issue, but I think it's definitely, it's not a jumping on point.
Yeah. So tell the truth, one thing that annoyed me more than the comic is all right. It's like, it's nothing special, but the thing that annoyed me is they have half-page adverts in it. Where, like, the panels stop halfway down the page, then they have an advert. The next page, they have half a page of comic, then another advert. I mean, no one likes adverts. It is an evil we've come to live with. But to take away half a page to stick in an advert, where you could have just moved both those half a page of adverts onto one page and had a page of comic, and I would have been fine with it.
Yeah, at least it's not as bad as one of the adverts that I found today.
I'm sorry, I don't get what your problem with that advert is. Like, that Star Wars...
I know it's a Star Wars quote. It's a Star Wars quote and that, everything like that. It's just, yeah.
It's not a good quote for the item it is advertising.
Yeah, it's for swimming trunks. It says,
boys, swimwear. Your first step into a larger world.
And I still don't think that's... terrible. It's not a great choice, but it's not as hilarious as you think it is.
I think that's partly because I think it's because my brain is more wired towards kind of Japanese humor at the moment, so that
I think your brain's just immature. That's the problem.
Yeah, there is that as well. It's what happens when you start getting older. It'll happen to you as well.
Oh God, one day we'll be as crazy as Rob is.
Maybe this is just what happens when you read The Winter Soldier for too long.
It warps your brain.
Yep.
Yes. Okay. What you got, Andrew?
Okay, I have got The Cat with a Really Big Head by Roman Dirge.
Yes.
Who's, of course, well-known for his Lenore the Little Dead Girl books.
Yes.
This is completely unrelated to that. This is actually a series of three different stories. So, like, kind of, obviously, the main one is, of course, The Cat with the Really Big Head, which tells the tale of a cat with a really big head. Like, the author's own
never
words.
Never saw it coming.
It's basically inspired by the idea of, what if the Elephant Man was a cat?
Ah.
So, yeah, it's just basically, it's a cat. The cat is born with a really big head, and it struggles with life. So, like, you've got great things, like, basically, its first hairball, which is, like, basically the size of it. And basically, his owner, called Max, basically gets really attached to the hairball and sticks googly eyes on it and calls it Miss Purty Angel Puff.
That's an amazing name.
It is, and it's basically just constant and unending madness, and it's horrible and amazing.
It's like, kind of what we expect from Roman Dirge, though.
Like, basically, this stuff, like, basically, the cat can't bend down to eat because that would break its neck, so it has to eat kibble through a straw.
Ouch.
And basically, you see it trying to eat chunky beef chunk with beef and failing dismally. And like one time it tries to go outside and you just get this picture of just the cat, like its head just shoved through the cat flap. And it's so funny. But eventually...
It seems like so similar humor to Eleanor the Dead Girl.
Yeah, it is that very... It's very dark and... Well, basically it gets so dark to the point that literally the page after the story is just an apology to Joseph Merrick.
I like it.
Yeah, so then after that we have the second story, which is A Big Question, which is about little Elisa McGee, as cute as could be, with a wonderful life ahead. She had hopes, she had dreams of magical things, except she ended up dead. Like, it starts off with just a picture of her, and then it just pulls out to a picture of her with an aeroplane about to land on her.
What?
Yeah, it's such a dark... Basically, Elisa, she dies. She basically kind of comes back, like, as a zombie, and kind of follows the guy, like, from the who performed her autopsy. She follows him home and basically just keeps asking him, like, why. And it's great. Like, basically it's all done like this nursery rhyme style,
yeah,
except up to one point where just somebody goes, and here's where the nursery rhyme stops, because death is serious.
Ah. Robin Dirge.
Yeah,
I wonder what goes on in that brain of yours.
And then the final story, which I'm actually surprised just by how incredibly poignant it is. It's called The Monsters in My Tummy. It's basically like, it's actually about Roman Dirge and just a really bad breakup he had.
Yeah.
And basically the story of like all these negative emotions kind of manifesting themselves like as monsters who live in his stomach. And like they kill his heart and basically begin to go on a rampage until eventually kind of two more monsters called Pride and Ambition are born.
Yeah.
And they kill all the other monsters, but then they also die. And basically, like, the last page is really sad because basically everything's dead. And yeah, so the two soldiers fought a brave fight. They killed each other, and in a way, this was right. But emotions are dead, both good and bad. Now I feel lost. They were all that I had.
How emo.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's quite sad. But I love the dedication for this story, because it's dedicated to a certain girl. I hope your life is filled with wonderful accomplishments, love, and all the magic you desire. But I hope your death is slow and horrible.
That's how you dedicate.
Yeah. But yeah, this book was great fun. It made me laugh more times than it really should have.
Yeah, but it's kind of what we've come to expect from Roman Dirge, especially after reading Lenara. I love Lenara. Cute little dead girl. So much fun. Anyway, should I do Deadpool's Secret Wars? This is continuing on. This is issue 2 of Deadpool's Secret Wars. And this begins with Deadpool looking handsome with his 70s pontache and blonde locks and his muscular figure. How did he get fixed? How is he now looking like he did before? He immediately gets attacked by a lizard who's shouting at him for hurting Wasp, because the lizard has a thing for Wasp, because she bandaged his arm. Deadpool rips off Lizard's tail and then forces him to carry it after convincing Lizard that they should join forces to try and fix Wasp. Meantime, Deadpool is also with the mutants. This was a few days earlier. Deadpool is with the mutants who have decided to go off and join Magneto. Spider-Man obviously eavesdrops, as spiders do, because he could be in a corner and no one would see him until it was too late. Deadpool gives chase, and they end up in a room full of monitors, which Deadpool mistakes for a shield. He then takes the one that has his kind of mask on, and he's like, I have a shield now. But his shield also projects his thoughts and kind of tells the future, with a point that he keeps mentioning to Captain America, because Captain America is no longer the only person with a cool shield. Deadpool's shield is better, apparently. Until it breaks, at which point Captain America says to him, you did good. And he's like, oh, you'd say that now, wouldn't you, Cap? Now that you have your sparkly shield, you're the only person with a sparkly shield now, aren't you? Well, I had a sparkly shield once. It was sparklier than yours. So, yes, Deadpool. Also in the middle of this, and at some time, with the mountain, someone drops a mountain on Deadpool, Captain America, Hulk, Iron Man, and various other people. Nobody's exactly sure who dropped the mountain at this point. or why? I can't remember.
I think it was Doctor Doom, maybe?
Well, it was a mountain. It was floating. It landed on them, and Deadpool managed to annoy the Hulk enough to make him angry enough to blow a hole in the side of the mountain. But he broke it. Reed Richards broke Deadpool's new shieldy in the process. And then you find out how Deadpool got healed, and it's all to do with an alien woman who can heal things. And she healed Deadpool, at which point Deadpool thought, I'm going to live with this woman. She is amazing. And it looks like they're going to live together until you see what's on the shield.
Which is just not indicative of a happy ending.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Poor Deadpool. But then again, you know, death has a thing for Deadpool. Does she still have a thing for Deadpool?
Well, he's been with the Devil Woman for a while, hasn't he?
He's been with the Devil Woman for a while.
Well, actually, I'm not sure how it comes into the Secret Wars
she's not in
continuity.
Because that's like the first Secret Wars continuity, yeah. So she wasn't in that one. But,
yeah, that's like before they met.
But I know that Death has had a thing for Deadpool for a while.
Yeah, yeah, because Thanos got really jealous.
Yeah.
Cash.
Yeah, I know. Thanos got really jealous is an understatement.
Yeah, he got like Thanos levels of jealous.
No, wasn't it? It has been suggested that because of Deadpool having gone everywhere, it's been suggested that Thanos getting the Infinity Gauntlet and wiping out half the universe was basically his way of trying to impress Death.
Him trying to one up Deadpool.
Yeah, him trying to one up Deadpool. That's basically one of the stories that's been going around. Is that Thanos wiping out half the universe was just him trying to one up Deadpool and get Death to look at him.
Notice me, senpai.
Yeah, basically, yes. So yeah, Deadpool. Gotta love him.
Right. Yes, he makes things so much fun.
Right, you got one more, have you?
Yep. Next up, I have The Last Days of Magneto, number 19.
Ooh.
This, like a lot of the other ones in this series, is split between two different events. One is him, when the worlds are converging, fighting off the Sentinels. The other is him, before these events, seeking out ways to make himself stronger. And this is him looking for technology to boost, like, his own power. And in this one, he goes to the Sugar Man to try and find out if he can find a way to make him stronger. And he goes to him because, like, he's not the smartest, but he can do something quick and dirty, and that's what he wants. Something to make him stronger. Once they've designed something for him, they kill the Sugar Man, and sort of so he can boost his power, and that guy's gone. Except something I liked in this is it shows sort of the cult of Magneto that's happening. You see like kids like wearing things that says like Magneto was right and wearing helmet replicas and stuff. Like, because Magneto is currently like the one person trying to save them that they can physically see saving them. Like, he creates an interesting dynamic when the world's hated him for so long and now everyone's resting on him. It's like, I really love in the Last Days of Magneto. I think it's a great series.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. It's a shame that it's kind of like a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, because we know what's going to happen. It's sort of, it's just a moot point what he's doing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hmm.
Like Last Days of Magneto. It says it all in the title, really.
Yeah. Ah, that's a shame. Right, okay. You got another one, have you?
Yeah, I have another few.
Ooh,
because what have you got? I have Captain America 402 to 408. Yes, this is kind of... Let's see, we've got a bunch of old retro comics that we've been going through recently.
Yes, the mythical boxes have arrived.
Yes, and so this is possibly the greatest moment in Captain America's history. It is the
most embarrassing
storyline. So Captain America, basically he's like investigating a bunch of like mysterious disappearances, including that of John Jameson. And basically, he goes to like this small town called Stokesville, I think, or something like Stokesboro, I think.
Stokesley?
Yes, yes, he goes to Stokesley. And he basically finds that everyone there is a werewolf, including Wolverine.
So he's been to Stokesley then?
Yeah, yeah.
Really been to Stokesley.
And like the entire town is like run by a druid.
Who's, yep, like, that sounds more like Stokesley.
Kind of druidic ritual. So Captain America, he kind of goes in, tries to save them, but he gets captured, and then he gets turned into a werewolf.
Sounds exactly like Stokesley.
Because he gets chapped full of magic werewolf potion.
Is that how werewolfism works?
Apparently.
Yes, well. Yes, it is. That is exactly how werewolfism works. Although it's great because, like, you still get it, like, from his perspective. So he's like, oh, grr, must run free.
Really?
Senses, yes. And then there's like, ooh, shiny thing, must take with me. And like, that's a shield. And like, literally, it's about someone tries to shoot him, and he's like, shiny thing, protect me.
Oh, God.
And it's just, it's so amazingly bad. It's just, every single panel is just more stupid upon stupid. And then Dr. Druid shows up as well. And he dies, but he doesn't die.
The worst Avenger of all. Yes. Or one of the worst Avengers of all. Dr. Druid.
Yes, he dies, but then it's okay. He gets back. Like, literally, they slit his throat. And then, like, he gets back up later. He's just like, yes, I used magic to heal my throat after bleeding to death. Well, whatever.
Because he's Dr. Druid.
Yes.
Did you not know this?
He is the most druidy druid. And then, at the end, he has to fight Star Wolf, Lord of the Wolves. Because that is who the druid guy turns into.
Star Wolf.
Yes, Star Wolf.
Isn't that a Star Fox character?
No, because Star Fox is also Eros of Titan.
Actually,
Thanos'
brother.
Yes, I'd
love if, like, Star Fox to come down as well to help fight Star Wolf.
I mean, Star Fox's, Star Fox or Eros's ability is to stimulate the pleasure centers of sentient beings' brains and make them feel happy.
Yes, happy in large inverted commas.
Yes. Now, if Fox McCloud had that ability, Star Fox would be a very different game.
It would be a lot more Japanese.
Yes, it would.
Anyway, should we just go back
yes,
to Captain...
Yeah,
so,
Cap
yeah,
Wolf.
Captain, yes, Cap Wolf. No, he beats Star Wolf, and then like they find an antidote. But this isn't the end of the story yet, because just about as he's about to take the antidote, vampire US agent bursts through a wall, and they fight. And there's no contact at all as to why US
agent
is
he just shows up.
Yeah.
Except, I am here now.
And then, like, Catwolf beats it. It's great, but Catwolf beats him, like, while turning back into Captain America. And there's, like, there's this amazing, like, kind of halfway stage where it's just Captain America with a massive beard.
So, like, a hipster version of Captain
Basically,
America.
Yeah.
Do you know what this sounds like? This I know where they got the plot for that Van Helsing movie from now.
Yes. This
they basically took the Capwolf storyline and made a movie called Van Helsing.
That would have been a much better movie if they copied it better.
Yes,
no, that was basically Van Helsing, though. It was basically. What was it? I forgot his name.
Yeah, Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman going, wolf, shiny thing, must kill vampire.
Which actually, it's funny because, like, Wolverine shows up in this as well. Because, like, he's been possessed by the werewolves as well.
Like, Wolverine's been possessed by the werewolves.
I like the idea that maybe he's not. And he just turned up there and didn't notice. Like, oh, everyone looks kind of like me. I'm just going to hang out. And everyone's like, oh, it looks like a werewolf.
Everyone's growling. He's
one's noticed. Wolverine's like, everyone's like me.
I'm home. It's Stokesley.
I've got another bit. The Cable shows up as well. Like, he doesn't even know what's going on. He just, like, bursts through the door and just starts firing a gun into the crowd of werewolves.
Where am I? I'm pretty sure that's just Cable's job. Show out of nowhere, start shooting.
I just scream, I'm from the future.
Yes.
Yeah, Catwolf, best storyline ever, and plot for the next Captain America movie confirmed.
Well, can't be any worse than Age of Ultron.
Ooh, yeah. Burn.
Anything else left then? Or have we exhausted? Or are you actually going to do Man Thing? The tear stained man thing?
I will save tear stained man thing for another time.
The look on Ryan's face. Just Ryan just suddenly looking up, going, "What? What are you talking about now? It's a comic show. What about it?" Anyway, where were we?
I think we're probably at the end of the show.
Yes, I think we are. I think we are. I think we're pretty much done. Right, okay. That has been Four Panel. We'll be back next week with more new and old comics. We might have some Tales of Suspense. We've got all sorts we can choose from now.
We do indeed. We might even have some, like, what is it, Monarch the Starstalker?
Yeah, Monarch Starstalker. I don't know who he is. We've got Cole the Conqueror. Does anybody know who Cole is?
The Coltrane baby. Gizwatu.
He's called Cole? Really?
I don't know. He's the only Cole I know.
Ah, right. Okay, Cole, you mean. No. Cole. K-U-L-L.
Oh.
Yeah.
Coltrane baby!
Anyway, I have been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
I've been Ben.
We'll see you all next week.
Bye.